Humans have been getting up close and personal with failure for centuries. Take the cases of Anne and Mary Boleyn. If you're wondering who, well, think back to Tudor England. Henry VIII shocks the Western world by divorcing his old queen and crowning Anne Boleyn in her place. 5 years later, he cuts off her head. Most people remember that much. But Anne Boleyn had a sister named Mary, and Henry slept with her, too, before he moved on to Anne.
Anne. I meant to come sooner. I'm sorry I did not. I've been kept occupied.
So I hear. Amusing the king.
Only that sister, I assure you. Despite his best efforts.
What, not yours?
How is it?
The child is strong. He gives me no rest. Like his father.
Do you feel as awful as you look? You know, in France, no woman would allow herself to get in such a state.
Why did you come, Anne, if all you desire is to torment me?
Perhaps now you know how it feels. To be deceived by your sister.
I did nothing.
You stole the king away, and then you betrayed me over Henry Percy.
If that's what you think, fine, tell yourself that.
I did, sister. Every day and every night I was in exile.
A clip from the film adaptation of The Other Boleyn Girl. History hasn't been kind to Mary Boleyn. She's usually portrayed as the failed sister, the one who couldn't catch a king. Historian Alison Weir sets the record straight in the new biography Mary Boleyn, the Mistress of Kings. She tells Anne Strangechamps that Mary had a bad reputation even before she met Henry, which was probably undeserved.
It's not the sensational sex scandal we think it was, because she was quite young when she was briefly the mistress of Francis I, and we only know of that affair through something that a papal nuncio reported over 20 years later. And he's the one who called her the great and infamous whore, and he said that the French king had said she was a great and infamous whore. And both of them were certainly exaggerating. They had good reason to them. Henry VIII was not in their good books at the time, and the Boleyns were anathema to them. So it's natural that they would embroider what they remembered of Mary.
Hmm. Well, who was Mary Boleyn, and what was it about her that made her so irresistible to two different kings?
Well, she was the eldest daughter of Sir Thomas Boleyn, the eldest sister of Anne Boleyn and their brother George. And her father's chaplain said that she was by far the more beautiful of the two sisters. But it seems that Mary didn't become Henry VIII's mistress willingly. The word used was violate, and in those days that could only mean rape or ravishment. It seems she was forced into that position.
How old would she have been?
She would have been probably in her early to mid-20s at that time, and she was married. She'd been married about 2 years.
So the fact that she was married wasn't an impediment to the king raping her?
No, I wouldn't say use the word rape. I would say being put in a position where she couldn't say no. He was the king. You didn't say no to the king unless you were her younger sister, Anne, who had more temerity and daring than most people.
Yes, well, we know how that turned out.
Yes, we do. And Mary was a lot luckier than Anne, believe me.
Well, so in terms of broad strokes, here's Mary Boleyn, who's sent off to the French court, has an affair with the king there, comes back to the English court and catches the eye of Henry VIII. What are the other sort of general shape of her life?
Well, she was Henry's mistress probably for less than 2 years. She probably bore him a child, a daughter. Her second child was probably the child of her husband. A couple of years after Henry dumped her, so to speak, he began pursuing her sister Anne passionately. And a couple of years later, in 1528, Mary lost her husband and was left in penury. And from then on, she lives a very quiet life at her father's charge at Hever Castle, her family home. And she becomes a lady-in-waiting to her sister Anne. But she's kept very much in the background because her relationship with Henry created an impediment to Henry's marriage to Anne. And therefore, Mary was a walking reminder of the illegitimacy of that marriage.
Why would her relationship with Henry have been an impediment to Henry's marrying her sister?
Because sleeping with two women made the second relationship incestuous.
Oh, whether you were married or not, just the fact that you slept with the sister.
It was the fact of the relationship. It created what the church called an affinity. There was a barrier to the second marriage. Now, the Pope could issue a dispensation and indeed did issue a general one, not specifically for Henry to marry Anne. But later on, those dispensations were repudiated by the Church of England. Mm. So it was a very, very debatable point as to whether Henry was legally married to Anne. And in fact, that was the grounds on which the marriage was annulled when she fell in 1536.
How much do we know about, I don't know, the personalities of the people we're talking about and how they would have talked with each other, what they would have done?
We don't have any quotes from Mary. We only have a couple of letters. One's very detailed and one gives us a lot of insights into her character. But you can only infer from people's actions what they did and what they wrote. With Anne, we've got a lot, so we know quite a lot about her. With Henry, we've got an enormous amount. But Mary eludes us. It's hard to know what she was like as a person. It seems that she was jealous of her sister. And that when she'd made a very unfortunate marriage, second marriage, and was banished from court, and wrote this letter to the king's chief minister, supposedly trying to get back into favour with her sister and the king, she was actually sticking the knife in with her sister, because she wrote, "I had rather beg my bread with my husband than be the greatest queen christened."
Ooh.
Ooh, ouch, yes. She didn't get anywhere. Well, yeah. She never saw Anne again, and they were almost certainly not reconciled.
Well, you can imagine why she would have been jealous of Anne, wouldn't you?
Many, many reasons. Anne went before her into the world of courts, although Mary should have gone first as the elder sister. Anne shone. She married the king who'd abandoned Mary. And you know, there's Mary shoved into the background.
Do we know much about how Mary reacted to Anne's imprisonment?
Not at all. Not a word. And that's tragic. This is where you're sort of tearing your hair out, because there just isn't the source material. In fact, everything about Mary is controversial. And you can't just tell her life as a story, as a narrative. It's constant debate. That's always a problem for a biographer.
That's interesting. What do you mean, constant debate? What are the big questions that remain?
Oh, the big questions are, well, even where she was born, what age she was, whether she was older than Anne, what she looked like. But the big question, apart from her affairs, her royal affairs, is, were her children fathered by Henry VIII? And debate rages. In fact, it's very controversial. I came to the book thinking that Henry would have acknowledged those children, as he did his only known bastard son, Henry Fitzroy, and he ennobled him. Now, Mary Boleyn's two children were born within her marriage to William Carey, and there was a legal presumption that they were his children. But it was almost certain that the boy who came second was William Carey's son. But the girl, Catherine Carey, who was born first, there is some very convincing evidence that she was Henry's daughter.
Wow. So here are two.
And that was quite an exciting thing. I came right the way round to the opposite point of view. I also found out that Henry had another illegitimate daughter whom he didn't acknowledge. So you couldn't just say that if the king had had illegitimate children, he would have acknowledged them.
So what happened to Mary in the end? You said that she was banished from court for making an unsuitable marriage. How unsuitable? Yeah. Who did she marry?
She married Mr. William Stafford, plain Mr. William Stafford. He wasn't even a knight. And of course, that counted for a lot amongst the Tudor landed classes. But he didn't have any fortune. He was no match for the Queen's sister. But what was worse, she just appeared at court pregnant. That looked scandalous in itself. And then she confessed she'd made this impulsive marriage for love. And that was regarded as akin to insanity. And yeah,
one didn't marry.
You
didn't marry for love. You married for political advancement or money.
Yes, that's right. Or to migrate families, that kind of thing. No, I mean, it was considered scandalous. And once they'd been banished the court, they went to live abroad in Calais. And then they came back to England. He got a post at court. And her father and her grandmother died. And they left her half the Boleyn wealth. But she had to fight for it. She had to contest the crown. And that took 3 years. And she didn't get a grant of it until 4 days before her death, which is pretty tragic.
Yeah. Do you think she was happy? I mean, do you think her life looks like a trajectory upward and then a dramatic fall, and her sister looks like she's going to take off and do much better, but then, of course, her sister has a much worse fall and loses her life. Did Mary wind up happy?
I think she did, because if you read that letter to Cromwell, which is the only clue we have about her marriage, if you read that, it's quite clear how much they loved each other, apart from he was 12 years younger than her. And he remained a widower. He mourned her for 9 years. So I think this was a happy marriage.
Alison Weir is a historical biographer and novelist. Her latest book is called Mary Boleyn, Mistress of Kings. Anne Strangeham spoke with her.